The next case is Apple v. Zipit, appeal number 21-1760. Ms. Degnan, when you're ready.
May I please the court, Lauren Degnan for Apple. The district court's error here was a legal one. It dismissed the case because it believed the Red Wing Shoe line of cases required dismissal because Zipit's contacts with California all related to the attempted resolution of the status of the asserted patent. In other words, the district court applied a bright-line rule that none of the contacts it had found satisfied the minimum contact prongs of the analysis could support jurisdiction, even though when it went through the Burger King factors, it also determined that Apple and California's interests are not clearly outweighed by Zipit. But because Red Wine Shoe and its progeny did not establish such a bright-line rule, the court made a legal error in dismissing the case. Under the proper legal test, this district court had personal jurisdiction over Zipit, and this court should reverse.
Ms. Degnan, what role do you think the rationale in Red Wing Shoe should have? You know, Red Wing stands for the idea that there's, I don't think it's patent specific because there's other circuits that have endorsed the policy, which is that there are reasons to encourage notice letters. When a right holder reaches out with its notice letter, that we wouldn't want to prevent somebody who's a right holder, discourage their reaching out to try to settle a dispute outside of the judicial system by saying that whenever you send a letter, you're going to be possibly hauled into court in that jurisdiction. So it is a policy, right? But the question is, you're saying that it shouldn't be a per se rule, but do you think it has a place for us to consider and for courts to consider in personal jurisdiction?
So what I would say there is that it does have a place, and I believe Trimble, in fact, kind of recognized the place, because although Trimble clarifies the scope of Red Wing 2, it accepts this notion, which was, I think, part of the reasoning you're referencing, that the patentee should have some latitude in order to make a notification. And I think what we have, you know, in the wake of Trimble and looking at that policy, there's cases on one end of the spectrum where there's notification, a limited number of contacts. On the other hand, as the spectrum is Trimble, where it goes well beyond notifying your adversaries of your rights. And when you cross into, you know, we're looking at the spectrum, doing more than what was done in, for example, cases like Red Wing Shoe, which had a limited number of communications, I think you fall into the realm of personal jurisdiction. So to be precise on your question, it is a fact to be considered because substantial notions of fair play and traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice have this idea that a single notice letter, or as in Red Wing Shoe, maybe three notice letters is not.
What is it in your case that makes you think your case has quality and a quality of contacts with the forum that would make it so jurisdiction would not violate notions of fair play and substantial justice?
Okay, good. We have regular, repeated, and escalating contacts in terms of threats. I would say regular and repeated, there's at least 12 purposely directed contacts after the initial notice letter that was sent to Apple. They are were roughly quarterly if you're looking at the December 2013 through April 26 timeframe. If you look at the dates in the record at Appendix 107, Paragraph 4, 131, 141, 144, 146, and 150, I'd say they were regular, not sporadic. And I would also say they include in-person, purposely directed in-person visits to the jurisdiction, just like in Xilinx where there was personal visits into the jurisdiction.
I noticed, and I wanted to just one question about one of those. I noticed that JA-144, there was some reference to purchase patents. Do you know anything about that, the purchasing of the discussions about not just licensing, but maybe purchasing Zipit's patents?
So I think in Appendix 144, it's referring to the very first letter in the supplemental appendix, where the last paragraph of that letter says, we are open to discussing licensing or purchase. And so in terms of the substantive discussions about purchase, That is not in the record, but I think it follows up on the original letter that said licensing and purchasing were options.
I think that makes a difference. As compared to other cases, do you think that somehow attempts to sell patents or purchase patents, that that is a more meaningful contact?
So, Your Honor, what I would say to that is that it is a more meaningful contact. I agree with that. And it's part of the overall, you want to look at the overall character and nature of the contact.
Do you think that the notion of what is fair play and substantial justice could change over time? Like, especially looking at, for example, a defendant's burden. For example, a defendant's burden in 1982 to litigate in a foreign forum might be different than a defendant's burden now.
So I think it, as an abstract question, if we're looking at a very long period of time, like the turn of the century, certainly it would be more burdensome than it would be today. But I think in terms of examining the timeframes at issue here, I don't think there's been a substantial change in what it means to have fair play and substantial justice. If I may, I was going to talk about the escalating nature of the threat, unless Your Honor has more questions on that point. So there was an escalating nature of the threat here, just like in Trimble. The original allegations were infringement, and then they became willful infringement and a threat of suit after the second in-person meeting that was occurred. And then the third thing that makes this case fall on the spectrum of personal jurisdiction is that the communications also involved keeping Apple updated as to the progress of the IPR proceeding that was happening. There are communications both when sending the brief, Appendix 144, asking Apple to look at them, and then reporting on what had happened. And in some ways, that's similar, although not exactly the same, to the types of communications, electronics for imaging, and Deprenyl Animal Hospital, where they were keeping, the patentee was keeping its adversary apprised of the status of the patent application. And so, again, I would say in the spectrum of things like Red Wing Shoe, even Max Chief, some of these cases that have very limited, one, two, three sort of written communications, almost never in-person visits, unlike in Xilinx. When you're looking at that spectrum, our case falls on the personal jurisdiction side well beyond what was insufficient in Red Wing Shoe and well beyond what would be needed to notify the adversary of the rights.
When Zipit filed suit in Georgia, did it file a complaint on Apple in California?
It did serve Apple in California. That's correct, Your Honor.
How do you respond to the argument by Zipit that the contacts in California went stale, if you will, because they were so long ago, and so it would be unfair to expect them to be subject to California's jurisdiction?
So we're talking about specific personal jurisdiction, which has to arise out of the context. And so in this situation, specific jurisdiction doesn't expire. And so to the extent, a dispute has become stale, there's other doctrines that would, such as case and controversy, that would kick in to address sort of, the passage of time. But here we got to remember, we're not talking general jurisdiction, we're talking specific jurisdiction that already requires the suit to arise out of those contexts, which it clearly does here. The court so found, that's supported amply by the record. It's not even really challenged by Zipit. All right, if the court doesn't have questions, I am happy to reserve more of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Dignan. We'll hear from your friends on the other side. Mr. Alexander.
Good morning, and may it please the court. The district court correctly decided this case in granting Zipit's motion to dismiss. Zipit had no reason to foresee being hailed into court when it had contact with Apple in California, and that's a very important point under Supreme Court precedent. The Burger King case says that by requiring that individuals have fair warning that a particular activity may subject them to the jurisdiction of a foreign sovereign, the Due Process Clause gives a degree of predictability to the legal system that allows potential defendants to structure their primary conduct with some minimum assurance as to where that conduct will and will not render them liable.
Why do you think that that Zipit had no thought that it could be hauled into court in California?
Because I think even under Apple's description of the law, at the time these contacts were going on between 2013 and 2016, I don't think there's any dispute that the Federal Circuit precedent at that time, like Breckenridge, for example, stated that a defendant may not be subjected to personal jurisdiction if its only additional activities in the forum state involve unsuccessful attempts to license the patent there. Breckenridge also states that where all of the patentee's contacts were for the purpose of warning against infringement or negotiating license agreements, and he lacked a binding obligation in the forum relating to patent enforcement, the exercise of personal jurisdiction over the patentee would be unconstitutional.
What about, so you're saying because of the timing of those contacts that your client, I guess, was relying on Federal Circuit law to say that it wouldn't be hauled into court in California. But what about Supreme Court case law? There's a number of Supreme Court cases that say that there should be no mechanical rules when it comes to personal jurisdiction, looking at the Burger King factors, that it needs to be more of a holistic exercise.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at Apple's brief, I think the cases that it cites, in particular the Quill case from 1992, that's a case that dealt with whether or not a state has the authority to pass laws forcing an out-of-state, say, retailer shipping products into the state to collect sales tax or use tax. And so Apple argues that, I guess, that Zipit should have read...
I don't know that you're answering my question. My question is, how am I supposed to read Red Wing Shoe in our earlier precedent in light of Supreme Court cases that make it very clear that there should be no mechanical test? I don't know why you're telling me about the Quill case in response to my very basic question.
Okay, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I think the answer is that the Supreme Court cases are warning in particular about patent-specific policies, and that's not what we have here.
Why is this a patent-specific policy? Why are you reading Red Wing as a patent-specific policy? We have a number of cases that were mentioned in the Trimble case, for example, that show that this is not patent-specific, that in fact it is relates to any notice letters. There's the Halliburton case, the Calder case, the genetic implant case, the Beacon Enterprises case. There's tons of cases where other circuits have said it's an important policy to think about the rights of a party that's sending a notice letter.
I apologize, Your Honor. I agree with you. I don't think the Red Wing line of cases is a patent-specific policy, and therefore I don't think it violates the Supreme Court's warnings against.
But why should this policy that you both, you and I agree on, why it trump all the other considerations that we are supposed to require under Burns?
Because it is unreasonable under the Burger King factors, like the basically the social interest and public policy factors, to hail somebody into court when they're just trying to settle a dispute.
Are there any Supreme Court cases that say that, that say there should be a bright line rule like that?
I'm not aware of any Supreme Court cases, Your Honor, but I am aware of binding Federal Circuit cases that say that. And so Zipit's position is that is the current law of the Federal Circuit.
So your view is that Trimble, what is your view about Trimble? What would you say about Trimble?
I believe I agree with Apple in the sense that I don't think Trimble changed the law. And so Red Wing is still binding Federal Circuit law.
Your view is that there is a per se rule.
I believe that there is a rule that settlement efforts alone, like unsuccessful licensing efforts, like Breckenridge said, are not sufficient to make jurisdiction reasonable. In other words, if that's all you have, which is the case here, jurisdiction is unreasonable. I believe that's what Breckenridge said. I believe that remains the law. I don't think there's any Supreme Court case that has overruled Red Wing. So were the Federal Circuit to want to overrule Red Wing, I believe the appropriate procedure is for that to be done en banc.
What about for, there are situations where the Supreme Court can have case law that clarifies, for example, that there shouldn't be a bright line rule, that there are multi-factor analysis that should be occurring for personal jurisdiction. And so therefore, the court can reconsider its cases in light of the intervening case law, as subsequent panel can, and explain that an earlier panel was not creating a bright line rule for example. Why wouldn't that be appropriate?
Well, because I think in this case, I don't believe that Apple has provided, nor do I think Trimble identified any Supreme Court cases so on point to this issue that it effectively forces the Federal Circuit to revisit it, to change its Federal Circuit law in a panel opinion. Obviously,
okay. I understand your view.
I believe that Your Honor in, I believe it was the Jack Henry case, provided additional views asking the question, is it time for the Federal Circuit to revisit Red Wing? And in that sense, I think I agree with that there is a procedure in place. So I'm sorry, you had another question.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you some other questions. One is, did Zipit serve Apple with a complaint in California after filing in Georgia? Agree with opposing counsel that Zipit did?
I'm sorry, trying to look that up when my time came, Your Honor. I am looking at it right now, and that was, no, Your Honor. Zipit served Apple, care of CT Corporation System, registered agent at 289 South Culver Street in Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Okay, and then I have another question, which is, why did Zipit wait 4 years between the last communication with Apple in California and filing suit in Georgia? I'm just trying to understand.
Well, Zipit has had other matters, Your Honor, and it's a small company, so it only has so many resources to devote to enforcing its intellectual property rights.
I have one last question, which is, why did Zipit dismiss the Georgia case without prejudice 2 weeks after filing it?
So, Your Honor, that is not an issue that's of record, and Apple mentioned the fact of, obviously, the Georgia complaint and its dismissal, but that was not an issue that Apple relied on at the district court in arguing the reasonableness of jurisdiction. So there's nothing in the record about the
reason. Is it your view that, I mean, I could take judicial notice of that, though. We certainly could, I would think.
I'm sorry.
Could you address my question?
I didn't. I'd have to waive attorney-client. I don't have the authority to waive attorney-client privilege.
I understand that. Okay. Would you agree that, you know, what is a purposeful contact in a foreign state, and whether that, I guess more importantly, the notions of fair play and substantial justice could change over time? I'm not talking about the amount of time in this case, just over time generally, those concepts could change. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it because it's a quite nebulous test.
Your Honor, I do not disagree as a general matter that those sort of considerations could change over time. I will note that in this case, with some of the issues, like I believe you asked Apple's counsel about the burden on, say, in this case, the South Carolina company and litigating in California, could that change over time? Your Honor, Apple regularly comes to this court to dispute the convenience of litigating in places like Texas.
You're not going to get anywhere with me on this one because I see the convenience and the compelling reasons why jurisdiction would be unfair. Those are really different in terms of the level of proof required, right?
I'll accept Your Honor's position. I think nonetheless.
There are Supreme Court cases, for example, that say, hey, there might be personal jurisdiction in a particular forum, but then there might be a change of venue.
Fair enough. So in this case, let me speak to the facts of this case. Zipit is a real operating company. It's not a patent assertion entity. It's 14 employees, all based in South Carolina. The inventors of the patent in suit are the CEO and the vice president of business development. So the witnesses are critical. And to litigate in California for trial would be very burdensome on Zipit. And the difference between 2010 and 2022 hasn't changed that.
But aren't those arguments for venue, not for personal jurisdiction?
I mean, Your Honor,
if there's personal jurisdiction because of the contacts and the like, which the district court seemed to find and would have found, but for its reading that we have a per se rule, then the argument you're making about a small business with all of its employees located in South Carolina where the witnesses are seemed to me an awful like that you would argue for a change of venues for convenience purposes. That's a completely different question that the district court could address and may agree with you.
Well, I do believe that the issue of the burden on a company in litigating in the forum state is relevant to the reasonableness factor, but I would also agree with you, Your Honor, that our primary argument is the Red Wing shoe and Breckenridge settlement efforts aren't sufficient. And before my time expires, I would like to address the Trimble case, because even if Trimble changed the law or clarified the law in light of Supreme Court precedent or the like, Trimble says that Red Wing was decided correctly on its facts based on the sporadic nature of the contacts. And Apple tries to magnify the contacts here, but there really were only a handful of contacts. There were two emails and a letter, I believe, the two in-person visits, and a handful of phone calls. And I don't believe the record reflects who initiated those phone calls. So, and those contacts took place over the course of, you know, between 2013 and 2016. So, you know, Apple said that worked out to about roughly 1.25. I'm not sure it's quite that frequently, but whatever. It is, I don't know what you call that other than sporadic. And then when you combine the fact that 4 years went by before Apple's suit being filed, from Zipit's perspective, that is quite sporadic. And therefore, just like Trimble said, Red Wing was decided correctly on its facts, the same would be true here.
Anything else, Mr. Alexander?
No, if the court has no more questions, I'll conclude.
Okay. Ms. Degnan, you have some time for rebuttal.
First and foremost, I want to apologize. I misread the note I got last night on service. It was Georgia. Please accept my sincerest apologies. I did not mean to mislead the court. I want to start with this notion of fair warning that counsel mentioned in terms of why they had fair warning given this court's decision. And I'm going to start with that they went well beyond what was done in Red Wing's shoe, first and foremost. Second, in terms of the other Supreme Court cases they should have been aware of, as Xilinx highlighted, Walden, which came out in 2014 before the second visit that Zipit made to California as part of their efforts. And then Walden emphasized and noted the significance of in-person visits, and that's, of course, something that Xilinx relied upon when it noted that the something more under Red Wing could include in-person visits. With respect to Breckenridge, I think it's important to think about, look at Breckenridge as what it's done. It said it was summarizing law as of that time. But its facts with respect to the personal jurisdiction and the cease and desist letters were, in fact, pretty limited. In Breckenridge, there were three letters to customers in the forum, sort of the first batch of letters to customers in the forum, and then it turned on something else. And when you look at the cases that had come before Breckenridge that it was noted, again, it's extremely limited, much less significant than what we have in this case. But again, if you look at the actual dates of the purposely directed contact with the forum, in this case, after the initial letter in Q2 2013 that Zipit sent, again, they were almost quarterly, sometimes more than once a quarter, calls or visits or meetings. And in fact, we counted up as there's two in person, there's two calls. I agree the record doesn't say who made them, but again, it is Zipit's burden to prove that exercise of jurisdiction here is to be compellingly unreasonable. There are four emails or letters after the first one, including on Appendix 144, a series of emails that we're going to follow, that's the one that's mentioned there, and another discussion of an unknown format. So we're looking at least 12, depending on your count, the ones on the same day, more purposely directed contacts, including two visits. That makes this case factually much more, having much more in terms of number, in terms of regularity, than what we saw in Red Wing Shoe and some of the other cases of this court.
I would think in addition to number of contacts, frequency of contacts, you would talk about maybe the depth of the contacts. I think there were maybe claim charts and different things. I don't know if it matters, but do you think it matters how long the contacts are? I mean, in contact that says, hey, send me an email might be different than a contact that has claim charts, for example.
So, Your Honor, I would agree that the character of the individual contacts do matter. And what we have here is, again, there were claim charts sent. There were entire briefs from the IPR sent, the decisions from the IPRs. There were these meetings had presentations where they talked about the merits in detail. And so if we're looking at the character of the contacts, certainly this record has these facts put us on the side of the spectrum where there are substantial, substantive, purposely directed contacts that should matter and do matter in the personal jurisdiction analysis that would have, that would support the exercise of personal jurisdiction here in a way that comports with substantial justice and notions of fairness. The last thing I will say is that the district court definitely made a mistake here. And so we think given what the facts are, this court can reverse. To the extent the court would think that there would be a benefit to having additional weighing or analysis by the district court, an option is to vacate and send it back for that. Apple's position is, given the kinds of facts, the kinds of limited context that this court cases have said does not support specific personal jurisdiction, given those limited examples and our case is far more like Trimble in cases where there has been found jurisdiction for the reasons I've already stated. And so we would ask the court to reverse.
Thank you, Ms. Segan. The case is submitted.